Imagine you launch a product. It sells 30.5 million units. It generates $700 million in direct revenue. I mean, it is an absolute cultural
Oh,
phenomenon.
definitely. A total home run.
Right. But then you look at your internal data and you realize that nearly a third of your entire user base hasn't actually bought the game.
Like
Like, they are playing it, but they didn't pay you a single cent directly.
it's a statistical paradox that completely breaks the traditional rules of retail. But, in 2026, that is just the new normal.
It really is. So whether you are prepping for a marketing meeting or trying to catch up on industry trends, or you're just insanely curious about the business of gaming, this deep dive is tailored exactly for you.
We've got a lot to get through today.
We really do. We have a massive stack of industry reports, sales data, critical reviews, all detailing July 2026, which was a month that just completely rewrote the rules of the video game industry.
It really was a historic shift.
Yeah. So our mission today is to unpack exactly why a traditionally quiet summer month became the most consequential period in modern gaming and, what it means for the future of how we play and buy games.
Because if we look at historical data, publishers usually treat July like a total dead zone.
Right, it's summer.
Exactly. People are outside. You might get like a minor indie game or an expansion pack, but the big studios, they always save their heavy hitters for October and November, right before the holidays. But this year, over 40 major games launched in July alone.
Which is insane. So we have to start by figuring out why. And in reading through these reports, it basically comes down to, well, I look at it like trying to host a massive dinner party and everyone is rushing to eat the appetizers before a 600-pound gorilla arrives to just flip the entire buffet table over.
That is a very accurate analogy.
Thank you. And the gorilla in this scenario is Grand Theft Auto 6, which is looming over the industry in November.
Yeah, Grand Theft Auto 6 isn't just a game launch. It's a macroeconomic event. I mean, Rockstar pulled in a staggering $260 million in just its first week of pre-orders alone.
Wow.
Yeah, that is money spent by consumers on a game that isn't even playable yet. And the forecasts are projecting up to $5.2 billion in total revenue.
Okay, wait, let me stop you right there. 5.2 billion. How does a competing studio even begin to budget their marketing against that?
They don't.
Yeah.
They just don't. And that's exactly why we saw 40 games launch in July. If you're a publisher and you launch in the fall, you aren't just competing for dollars, you're competing for oxygen.
Because GTA just sucks all the air out of the room.
Exactly. They buy up all the ad inventory on Twitch, YouTube, IGN. They totally monopolize social media algorithms. So competing studios made this very pragmatic choice to basically evacuate the fall calendar. They scrambled to launch in July just so their games could actually be seen and bought before the GTA marketing black hole opens up.
Okay, so everyone rushes for the door to get out early. But this frantic scramble, I mean, it resulted in some incredible success stories, and honestly, none bigger than a game that actually used the last 30 months perfectly.
Oh, you're talking about Cow World.
Yes, I am. I really want to geek out over this for a second because the legendary return of Paul World's 1.0 launch is just phenomenal.
That's a masterclass, really.
Totally. So back in early 2024, it exploded out of nowhere, right? It was that survival game everyone called Pokemon with Guns. And then, as games do, the player count dropped off and settled around 58,000 concurrent players.
Which, to be clear, is a very healthy number. Having 58,000 people playing globally at the exact same second is a massive success for a studio like Pocket Pair.
Sure, yeah, it pays the bills. But then this July, they drop the 1.0 launch, they officially leave early access, and the numbers just go supernova. They hit 3.7 million daily active users and 961,000 concurrents on Steam.
It was a massive resurgence.
And reading the patch notes, they didn't just like tweak a few stats. They added this wing pack that completely changes how you fly around the map. They added a PAL that literally transforms into a two-handed sword.
That was a brilliant addition.
So cool, right, with its own unique combat moveset. Plus, they built these entirely new floating islands and really deep endgame content.
And we have to look at why it worked. Pocket Pair wasn't just throwing in cosmetic skins as a cynical cash grab. They spent 30 months doing highly transparent development in public. They listened to feedback, they fixed bugs constantly.
They built trust.
Exactly. In an era where early access can feel like a scam, they used it perfectly. And at $29.99, they totally undercut the $70 AAA games while delivering, deep survival mechanics and that classic nostalgia.
But this brings me back to that platform paradox I brought up at the start, because looking at the sales data, it's mind-boggling. So they sold 30.5 million copies, right? That's 700 million in revenue. And 86% of those sales were on Steam.
Right, the PC platform.
Yeah. But over on Xbox, they had 31.1% of the entire player base, so a massive chunk of players. But under 70,000 premium sales. Okay, let's unpack this. If an Xbox player base is that massive, but nobody is actually buying the game, how on earth is this sustainable for the developers?
It's the Game Pass effect. Microsoft pays these substantial, albeit undisclosed, sums of cash up front to put the game on their subscription service.
Okay, so the player just pays their monthly fee to Microsoft, and they get Palworld included.
Right. It expands the player base exponentially, but it drastically cannibalizes direct sales on that console. Because why would you buy it if you already have access?
You wouldn't.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But for the developer, they get guaranteed funding to survive that 30-month early access period, plus millions of players acting as word-of-mouth marketing, which fuels those massive direct sales over on Steam.
Okay, that makes sense for the developer. But if Game Pass is eating into direct sales, that perfectly explains Microsoft's next move, which was historic. They basically admitted their walled garden wasn't working.
Yeah, the old walls are just crumbling. Phil Spencer's strategy is entirely about ecosystem and services now, not hardware exclusivity.
Because we saw the unthinkable. Halo Campaign Evolved launched on the PS5.
It's incredible. Microsoft wants players in their ecosystem, even if that ecosystem is literally running on a Sony console.
And the game itself is super interesting. They built it in Unreal Engine 5, and they deliberately left out multiplayer. Like, if you want multiplayer, you still have to go play the Master Chief Collection.
Right, they kept it very focused.
Yeah, it features Operation Meteorite, which is three new prequel missions with Sanju Johnson, plus over 40 skulls, and get this, a fully functional third-person camera mode.
What's fascinating here is how PS5 players, many of whom were experiencing Halo for the very first time, just drove it to the absolute top of the PlayStation Store charts. It completely proved the demand for cross-platform access.
It really did.
Yeah.
Now, while Halo used a remake to cross enemy lines, another massive franchise used a remake to return to its roots and appease some very alienated fans.
Ah, yes. Assassin's Creed.
Yeah. Ubisoft's Black Flag Resynced. Massive success. 3.5 million copies sold in 2 weeks. And the upgrades are wild. They put it in the Ubisoft Anvil engine. No city loading screens. Seamless stealth crouching, finally.
Much needed.
Oh, totally. Plus 6 hours of new quests, three new officers, new Caroline story scenes. You can even get a pet cat or monkey for the jackdaw.
The monkey is a great touch.
It is. Oh, and 10 new sea shanties by Woodkid. But the strategic restraint here is what gets me. They explicitly kept it a solo adventure. It is not an RPG.
And that was a very deliberate, very smart choice. They respected the original legacy. They realized fans were tired of the bloated 100-hour RPG mechanics and just wanted a tight, classic pirate adventure. They innovated without losing the identity.
Speaking of innovating to save a legacy, we have to talk about Nintendo's dual-platform bridge strategy because original Switch hardware sales just plummeted 79%.
Yeah, that's because everyone knows the Switch 2 is coming in March 2027. Gamers are just holding onto their wallets.
Right. So Nintendo drops Splatoon Raiders. It's this bold pivot for the franchise. Instead of a competitive shooter, it's a single-player adventure featuring Shiver, Fry, and Big Man mining Spurlite shards. But the genius part is that it launched on both systems.
Exactly. It bridges the hardware gap. Mm. They didn't abandon the massive current install base, but they also give people a reason to look forward to the new hardware.
It's brilliant, but man, despite all these massive digital and cross-platform successes, looking at the macroeconomic data for July reveals a terrifying reality for traditional retail gaming.
The broader market numbers are definitely grim.
Yeah, U.S. gaming spending dropped 21%, down to $4.49 billion. Hardware plummeted 62%. Only Xbox grew, up 86%, but that was purely due to aggressive bundles ahead of Halo.
Right, and the reasons for this drop are pretty clear. You've got inflation squeezing budgets, you've got poor quality launches from early 2026 that ruined consumer trust, and of course, gamers hoarding cash for GTA 6 and the Switch 2.
It's brutal, and indie studios are really feeling it. The reports highlighted this game called The Mound, Omen of Cthulhu. It had 800,000 wish lists on Steam, but it totally failed.
Yeah, that is a textbook case of wishlist inflation.
Right, because people just use the wishlist button as a bookmark now, not as a promise to buy. But contrast that with Dewdrop Dynasty. It's this cheerful, gun-jumping insect Metroidvania. And it succeeded wildly because it explicitly rejected the bleak, depressing tone of games like Hollow Knight. People just wanted something fun.
That tonal shift was key for them. But the indie struggle ties into a much larger, frankly shocking trend. The death of physical media.
Oh my gosh, this stat blew my mind. In mid-July, only two PS5 games sold more than 10,000 physical copies in a week in the entire US.
It's practically nothing.
And only seven have crossed 100,000 all year. It made me realize that physical game discs are basically modern vinyl records.
That is exactly what they are.
Right, like they're rapidly becoming purely aesthetic collector's items. You put the steelbook on your shelf to show you're a fan, but the actual way people consume the media is entirely digital.
Sony actually validated this. They announced they are cautiously moving forward with halting physical disc production entirely. Digital and subscription models have completely won the war.
Wow. So let's pull all this together for the listener. Because July 2026 wasn't just a busy month. It was the month the industry's tectonic plates shifted.
Absolutely.
Exclusivity is basically dead, as we saw with Halo. Physical media is flatlining. Early access requires total transparency to work, like Palworld did. And above all, subscription ecosystems rule the earth.
They really do.
Yeah.
And, you know, leaving you with a final thought to mull over based on all this. If we are fully embracing a future where games are accessed via subscription services like Game Pass, rather than physical discs or direct digital ownership, what happens to video game preservation?
That's a scary thought.
It really is. Because if a multi-billion dollar subscription ecosystem decides to delist your favorite game because, say, a music license expired and no physical copy exists anywhere, does that piece of art simply cease to exist?
Wow. Yeah, it's like the landlord can just bulldoze the digital museum whenever they want.
Exactly.
Well, that is definitely something to think about. Thank you so much for taking this deep dive with us today. It has been incredible unpacking the business of July 2026 with you. We will catch you on the next deep dive.